Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. My guest this week is Rashad Phillips, who was formerly of the Perth Wildcats in 2007. What got Rashad back onto my radar was a piece from the Sports Bet Trash Talk basketball podcast with Felix von Hoff, Mark Worthington, and Corey Homicide Williams, in which Corey told a story about he was scheduled to be Rashad's replacement at the Perth Wildcats. I'll play that now.
Scott Fisher was recruiting me for 2 years. I was still chasing the NBA. I was doing minor leagues in the D League and the CBA. And finally, you know, he won me over. Look, we want you to come to Australia, blah, 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 play. I was scheduled to replace Rashad Phillips because they said he didn't fit their style of play. And I agreed. That next day, what Scott Fisher said was, we want you to come. I said, cool, I'm down. He said, look, I have to discuss it with the board. I'm sure they'll be on board. Give me a couple of days to finalize it, and we'll get it done. We'll sign the pen to paper. I said, cool. The next day, the Crocs called me with Gleason. They needed somebody to replace Roselle Ellis, who tore his pec muscle. They knew Kelvin Robinson would not be able to run that team. So they brought me in. I said yes. It was the same amount of money, and my mind just thinking, just like this, without knowing the NBL, I said, why would I wait for a team to cut a player for the same amount of money I can get from this team that's ready today? That's why I didn't go to Perth and I went to Townsville. That's what the decision was. So it stemmed from there, this whole thing with Perth. And I called Scott Fisher. I said, look, I just want to let you know I'm going with Townsville Crocodiles. That next day, as soon as that deal was done, I called him. And that's how I did not go to Perth. Best decision of my fucking life.
So after hearing this, I got in touch with Rashad and said we wanted to talk about it, and he certainly did. There's a lot of controversy surrounding his time at the Wildcats. He was let go 7 games into the season despite playing very, very well. And there was a gag order and money withheld and all sorts of things. Rashad dispels all the myths and talks about everything. We also go on to talk about his time from high school through Detroit Mercy and College, where he scored over 2,319 points, and then onto the PIT tournament, and then the NBA draft, and then to the Wildcats. Rashad has his own website, Sports Talk 2319, in which he looks at college prospects and the NBA draft. It's a great little website. Definitely check it out. SportsTalk2319.com. Guys, I hope you enjoyed this interview with Rashad Phillips.
So let's start at the top. So which high school did you go to?
Ferndale High School, which was right outside of Detroit, Michigan.
And you're obviously dominating there, and then you decided to go to Detroit Mercy. What made you decide to go there? Was that a school you liked, or they recruited well?
Yeah, a little bit of both. As a kid growing up, my dad used to always take me to Callahan Hall. That's where the University of Detroit Titans played as a kid. So I watched them as a kid growing up, and I always could picture myself playing for my home city. And when the opportunity presented itself through high school, you know, I wasn't highly recruited, but U of D recruited me really hard. The coaching staff did a terrific job of recruiting me, and I just felt like it was a match made for me to, you know, stay close to home and mm-hmm. be able to play at the high level and kind of give kids in the city to show them that, you know, you can play college basketball right here in your home state. You don't have to always go to Michigan and Michigan State. So
yeah,
that was kind of my storyline.
And did you have other offers? Because, you know, you obviously see it in the movies where, like, guys are getting recruited, and that's quite a fun process. Was anyone ever coming in talking BS or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have the high majors. I had all the mid-major offers, you know, sure. But just for me, Georgia Tech was the one school that I probably would have went to outside of U of D, but I was a non-qualifier. So when you're a non-qualifier, the ACC, that at the particular time, the ACC didn't take non-qualifiers. So okay. I couldn't even go there and sit out because the conference didn't take non-qualifiers. So Georgia Tech was really on me heavy, and if I was a qualifier academically, I probably would have went to Georgia Tech. That's the funny thing. Yeah. But I ended up going to University of Detroit, and it was one of the best decisions that I've ever made.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've seen your numbers there, and they're very good. So you go there you do all 4 years. Was that a decision ahead of time? You're like, I'm going to do all four and be in the city and that sort of thing?
Well, you think back when I was playing, you know, 20 years ago, you know, you go to college for 4 years. You know, you had the rare instances where, you know, Kobe Bryant skipped college. You had got But when you are 5'9", 5'10", like me, you kind of set yourself to go 4 years unless something drastic happens. And for me, after my junior year, I actually had a decision to make because a lot of NBA teams started to call after my junior year. And so I balanced both. So there was a time where I thought I was going to leave early after my junior year, but I decided that legacy was more important for me at the end of the day, and not just trying to jump to the NBA and chase something that was going to be there if I waited. So I was really big on legacy and being remembered at the University of Detroit. And I felt like if I just stayed all 4 years, that I was going to be able to do something that will be remembered forever. And again, that was another great decision that I made to stay.
I mean, I've seen it, the points tallies, the assists, the win totals, the NCAA tournament appearances for a school like Detroit Mercy, which is, you know, mid-major.
They're
a hell of a thing, you know, and you're remembered for that, which is great. What made Detroit Mercy click for you? Like, was it a coach's style, or you just hit your straps, or what really got you going there?
I think it was a little bit of both. I think I really fell in love with the coaching staff at the time, Perry Watson, Mickey Barrett, David Greer, and Michael Jackson. I just thought that it was these were four guys that all played the point guard position. So I figured it would be great to have four guys that played the position help me become better at that position. If you look at Coach Watson, he coached Jalen Rose in high school. He was a big part of the Fab Five. So I figure he had tons of connections at the highest level, which was the NBA. And you look at David Greer, who still today is the all-time MAC assist leader from Bowling Green. So I felt like having those type of coaches kind of nourish me through the process of college. I just felt it was a win-win. And also just being close to home, that allowed my father, my mother, my family to kind of watch me play. So it kind of it served two purposes for me.
And it was the style there, because I haven't seen any college film. Was your style, were they very much a, like, push it, run, have fun type of team? Or
No. The funny thing is, no, they wasn't. That's the funny thing about my stats. You know, the points that I scored, if you look at it, like, I played for a defensive college coach. Like, coach, we were top five in the nation in defense for two out of my 4 years. Yeah. We prided ourselves on defense. We didn't run and gun at all. Wow. We didn't have that type of style of play. So for me, I had to be as efficient as possible, because back 20 years ago, it wasn't the up and down, fire up a ton of threes, tons of possessions. You look at these college players now, they're scoring 2,000 points in their sleep. Yeah. You know, but when players in my era, scoring 2,000 points was like, I mean, still a huge milestone, but 20 years ago, it was like, wow. Like, how did you score that many points? Because there wasn't a lot of possessions.
Right. And
as a freshman, I didn't start as a freshman. So you think about it, I was able to beat an all-time leading scorer at a school.
That first year.
Yeah, so you just, you know, my dad teased me all the time. We always laugh. He said, you would have scored 3,000 points in college if you would have just started as a freshman. So, you know, so those are the little hidden messages behind the 23-19.
Because, I mean, I looked at it and I just assumed, like, that many points, you must have started as a freshman, must have been quite an up and down. No, there you go.
Nope.
All right. So you're there 4 years. You do really well. Next, you move on to the PIT tournament, the Portsmouth Invitational. How do you get an invitation to that? Does someone come up to you, or do you kind of have not an agent, but of sorts? Or how do you get into that one?
Well, obviously, the committee for the Portsmouth, they send out letters to the top 60 seniors in the country. So obviously, I was an All-American my senior year, so mm-hmm. I got invited. So they sent an invite through the coaches, and I got my invite back in like February. The season ends in March. I got mine back in February, but I had got my invite the previous year as a junior, because technically I was a senior in a classroom, but I had only played 3 years because I had to sit out my first year. Remember, I was a non-qualified. Right.
Yep.
So, but
I understand.
You see what I'm saying? So technically I was a 4-year college student, but only a 3-year basketball player.
Gotcha.
So I was able to get the invite as a junior, But me coming back to school, they resent the invite again. And so that's when I accepted to go and play.
And that tournament, I'm assuming it's pretty intense competition because you got seniors, big bodies. You got guys who, there's scouts, a lot of scouts there, yes. I'm assuming.
Tons.
From NBA.
Overseas.
All across the world. And you do well in that tournament, second in scoring, second assists. You hit over half your threes. You shoot 54% from three. Yeah, MVP of the tournament. Tell me about that culture there. Like, is it really like you got to be real fierce? What's that like?
No, it's really intense because you basically, these are the top 60 seniors in the country. And you basically split us up and put us on teams and roll out a ball and tell us to fight it out in front of a bunch of scouts. You know, it's more like it's dog eat dog. You know, it's like, and for me, in those type of situations, I believe that the guards benefit more than the big man because we touch the ball a lot. So the big men are like offensive linemen in NFL football. They don't get to score touchdowns. They don't run the ball. But the point guards, we're like quarterbacks. We get to direct everything. So for me, that was in my favor. And I had mastered the ability to score efficiently without taking a lot of shots. So I knew if I take 10 shots, I'm going to make 7, you know, like that was my mindset because, you know, you can't shoot a lot in these type of games. You only get about 6 shots.
Yeah. And if you do, if you're taking too many options, scouts are probably like, he's a little trigger happy, right. You know, so you got to play that. You've got to balance it, right?
Yeah, you got to balance it. So for me, my mindset was, hey, I'm only going to get 10 shots. I got to make at least 6 every time. And that's kind of the approach I went. And it worked out for me, and I was able to win the championship with my team. I had great teammates.
Who was on your team?
I had Donald Hand was my backcourt mate. He was a great point guard that played at Virginia. So you got to look up Donald Hand. Yeah, he was a strong, tough, like pit bull type of point guard. So he did all the dirty work for me. I let him do all the fighting. And I did, and I took all the credit. But no, he was a great player. He was fantastic in the ACC. He was one of Virginia's greatest players. Look him up. Great guy. Me and him, we just had a field day. We just ran circles around teams for the whole weekend, and I ended up getting the MVP. But my teammates, especially Donald Hand, I owe him half of that trophy.
Okay. If I ever speak to him, I'll tell him that. I know that the Perth Wildcats are heavily into the PIT. Is that where you first met them, or were they about or not?
No, that was earlier in my career. You know,
I was about to say, when was the first time you heard the words Perth Wildcats?
The first time I heard Perth Wildcats was right when they offered me a contract. I didn't even know, you know, when they reached out to one of my agencies and they said, hey, would you like to play in Australia? And I was like, wow, like really? So when I did my research, I thought this is a phenomenal moment because I thought, hey, this is a place that speaks English, great weather, great people. I just thought that this was just a great opportunity for me and my family. So I jumped on it. I looked up the city. I'm like, oh, Perth is kind of like San Diego. It's kind of like
being a smallish suns on the beach. Definitely.
Yeah. Beach, sun, good weather. So I figured this is a no-brainer for me, you know. So I was very excited to actually sign and go play for the Perth Wildcats.
Because I know that, well, we're going back to the PIT. I know that the Perth's latest import this season, a guy by the name of Tarico White. They first met him there, and I know they're heavily involved. I thought maybe that's where they first sort of tapped you on the shoulder and came back to that conversation years later, but obviously not. So you go from there, and do you finish that PIT. Have you got an agent at that time? And that's where you kind of
got an agent right after that. Yeah, right. I got an agent right after that, and it was Hank Thomas, Henry Thomas, rest in peace. He was Wayne Wade's agent, Chris Bosch.
Wow.
He was out of Chicago at the time, based out of Chicago. At the time, he had Michael Finley. He had Tim Hardaway. He had Lindsey Hunter. So
he's a big agent.
He was a big agent at the time. He had some success as an agent. And so, you know, he took real good care of me. Yeah. And like I said, God rest his soul.
And when you, you go into that draft. So you declare for the draft. Like, do you? What's that process like? Where you're like, holy geez, I'm gonna throw my hat in the ring of the NBA.
I was excited because it was something I dreamed of as a kid my whole life. Not only that, but it was something that I've worked towards. I worked towards that moment, so I was prepared for that moment. I was prepared to be a great college player. I was prepared to win MVP at Portsmouth. Like, I prepared myself to play in the NBA. So for me, I was ready for that moment. It's just like preparing for your job, whatever that is. When you prepare for your job, think great things, positive things will happen because you prepare for it. So I was prepared for the moment.
You were a little bit anxious, but mainly you were like, yeah, I've done college, done PIT, next step.
Beautiful. I'm ready.
Did any teams before the draft, were you kind of in consult with any teams where they're like, yep, we like your game, we're thinking about, we've got this pick?
Yes.
What teams were they?
Well, it's funny because I got a funny story. Like, I live in Orlando, Florida now. Mm-hmm. And I think a reason I do today is because there's a little backstory of how the Orlando Magic was the team that showed the highest interest in me coming out of college. I talked to the GM at the time. His name was Gabriel. Doc Rivers was the coach. So I worked out for the Orlando Magic twice. And the workouts that I had, they loved me. The GM actually sat me down and was like, look, we got three picks in this draft. We're going to use one of these picks on you. So I just felt that at that time, Orlando Magic, I fell in love with the Orlando Magic. I fell in love with the city. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that today, after all of that, that I actually live here. And it's just funny how life has that. It has this full circle.
Sure. My next question is, where were you on draft day?
I was at home. I was at home with my mom. My dad was throwing a little party at his community center, which was not too far from the house that we lived in. But I sat at home with my mom like I did every year. Every year I would watch the draft. Sure. With my mom, and I would note how many point guards were taken in the first round. I would note how many, and that's why I've been, pretty decent at being a scout guy now. Because even when I was in the process, I was always studying how the draft worked. I was like, okay, they took, So I was with my mom at the particular time at home, and I watched it on TV like I did every year.
Because I went back and I had a look. So the one I went to is NBADraft.net, which is pretty reliable. They, in their mock draft at that time, they had you going 31st to Golden State.
Yeah.
Which turned out to be the Gilbert Arenas pick, which would have been fun. Looking at that draft, first of all, it's an unlucky draft to be in because they only had the 58 picks because two were taken away because Minnesota didn't pick. So already two guys aren't going to get picked. Then I looked at it and you had 14 centers taken, 14 power forwards, 11 small forwards, 7 shooting guards, 10 point guard. So bigs make up like 50% of the draft. Point guards 30. Like, and even that mock draft, like, they had a success rate of 85%. They picked 58 guys to make it. 49 of them got drafted. You're just one of that 15%.
It happens.
And I'm looking at some of the guys that got picked, like, and even of the 9 that didn't make it, there's Maurice Evans, who then went on to play undrafted. Jamari Moon's another. Guys who, you can't feel too bad. The first round was three pretty good guys. Tony Parker was one.
Phenomenal pick.
Jamal Tinsley was another.
Good pick.
And then one was Raul Lopez, I think his name is, Spanish point guard.
Utah took him. Yeah, I remember that draft like it was yesterday. And the funny thing, they had me going to Golden State at 31, but guess who was at 32? Orlando. Orlando had the second pick. And they took Omar Cook, the point guard from St. John's. And he never played. He never played for them. So it was I was devastated at that. It was like Orlando, I felt at the time Orlando wasted that pick. Like, they could have took me at 32 because they told me they would. So it was crazy to watch it all unfold. Because then you start playing all the conversations back in your mind, and you're like, well, they told me they was going to take me at 32, and then 32 comes, and they don't, so it was just a weird process, man.
Yeah, I can imagine. And then I think they even have a later pick. They take Gerald Sasser, I think, or maybe that came before.
Took Gerald Sasser. They took Gerald Sasser at 21, and they took Stephen Hunter at 15. Yeah, I remember it like it was yesterday.
I didn't know. I should have just. Yeah. Wow. Okay. So, and then that happens, and then you're on the phone to your agent. What do you say? What do you do? Where do you go from there?
I was a little, you know, I was hurt, you know, for me to sit here and say that I wasn't will be a bold-faced lie, man. I was hurt. Here I am, a 22-year-old kid that's worked his tail off to put himself in position. I was MVP of Portsmouth. You know, I worked out for the Orlando Magic. I worked out for the Golden State Warriors. And I'm feeling like I've done enough. I've done enough in my college career. I was an All-American. I won a Naismith Award. I was in the final. I led my team to win. So I felt like I've done enough. So you play all those things in your mind. It unfolds. It's like a movie. It's like your life really flashes before your eyes in like a 10-second reel. So I'm playing all this in the back of my head, and I'm looking like, how did you pass on me? Like, I wanted to line up every GM and just say, why you pass on me? Like, what did I do wrong? You know, so that's kind of how I felt.
And then you finish that. And then the G League, I think, is just starting up. That first year you're coming. You're the first draftee. You're in the first draft, yeah.
Very first draft for the NBDL draft.
What is the what's the G League or D League at that time? What's that experience like? Because you played that first year. What was that like?
It was fantastic, to be honest with you. Like, I wouldn't trade that experience, you know, that time of my life for anything in the world, obviously, because you go through things in life that builds you for who you are today. So if you take certain things out of your past, then maybe you won't be who you are today. Yeah. You know, so that D-League experience for me was fantastic. My coach, this is funny, it's a funny trivia question. Sam Vincent was my coach, head coach, who actually coached with the Bobcats.
And his
assistant coach was Dale Demps, who was the GM for the Pelicans, who just got fired a couple months ago. With the Lakers stuff. Dale Demps was my assistant coach. So I had a phenomenal time. I was actually the first point guard drafted in the D-League history. You can look it up. I was the seventh pick in that draft. And I went to the Mobile Revelers, which is in Alabama. So that year was good for me. And I just thought the league at the time, the way they were promoting the league, the reason I went to that league and not go overseas is because they were saying that they were going to be giving guys 10-day contracts.
Yeah.
So I figured this is the closest I'm going to be to the NBA. So let me stay in the country, play well, and get a call up. And I never got that call up.
Yeah. Do you think, I'm looking at it now, I mean, that league, the D now G League, has progressed to a point where it's this far away from the NBA. I think we saw 50% of guys go in and out of the league. Yeah. At that time, you still felt, though, this is a good spot for me to be in as far as going that next step?
Yeah, I thought it was a good spot at the particular time because I felt it was the closest to me to reach my dream, was to play in the NBA. And funny as it's kept, I left this story out, but before my senior year, I was offered a $1 million contract to play in Europe to forego my senior year at UAD. And when I left, before the draft, that same club offered me a $1 million contract. And I turned it down to play in the D-League. A lot of people don't know that. Because I was told that the D-League, I was on the top five list radar for, because I to yeah, be yeah. a 10-day, because they was like, you just missed the NBA draft. You're the first point guard drafted in this league. You got to think about the storyline. And mind you, I'm 23 years old at the time. You're the first point guard to be drafted in the D-League. You're the first point guard that's on every NBA GM's list to get a call-up. So you got to think, for me, I'm like, why would I walk away from that?
Yeah, makes sense.
You see what I'm saying?
So yeah, definitely.
If I could do it all over, I would just take the $1 million in Europe and call it a day.
And then you obviously, all right, so let's go from there. So you do that. We were saying before, the Wildcats first come on your radar in 2007 when they're offering you that contract.
Yeah.
How does that happen? Where are you sitting, or where are you playing, or did your agent do the work for you? How's that?
Yeah, I was actually at home. It was in the off season. It was the summer. I had just got done. I think I played, and I had some good years in Turkey. I had some good years in France. You can look at the statistics. I played well in France. I averaged like 27 and I
great leagues.
Yeah,
strong leagues.
The French league is phenomenal. Even like the B league is great. The A league is great. And a lot of I'd rather address this on your show because a lot of people tell me, oh, you didn't play in the top leagues or this and that. But you have to think as an American, as an import, when you're going to a team, you're looking for the best financial contract offer. You're not looking to play. You're going to go wherever they pay you the most money and you feel comfortable. So for me, when I took the job in France to play in the B league, it was actually more money than any of the A league teams could offer me.
Of course.
So for me at the time, it's like, I got to make money. It's not about playing in Euro league or I wasn't concerned with that.
Yeah.
I was more concerned about, okay, I've lost $1 million because I turned down money in Europe chasing a waterfall. And I'm not going to turn down the financial, whether it's a D league team, a G E B D A,
whatever.
If you're paying me, I'm going to take it. So that's what happened.
Because, yeah, I mean, you really got, as a sportsman, any code, really, you're lucky if you get 10 years. A bit more, bit either side. It's all you got. You got to get as much as you can out of your body and do as best you can.
Yeah, yeah, but to answer your question, I was at home. I was at home in the summer, and it came through an email. My agent reached out to me, and he said, this team really likes you. They're in Australia. I looked it up. And I didn't believe him because I was like, this is too good to be true. I went on a website. It was English. I looked at the city. I'm like, wow. He was like, no, this is for real. He's like, are you interested? I said, yes. Yeah. He faxed me over the contract. He was like, they're serious. They really want you. And when I got the contract, it was like, wow, this is real. So I was.
And it was a nice amount of money?
Yeah, it was a lot of money, you know, and it was like for that amount of money. And to go to Australia, where I think I love the NBL. I think the NBL, I think they need to invest more money in that league. I think it could really, like, if first of all, it's English speaking. So
one.
That's one. Then all the cities are great. Like, I still have friends in Adelaide and Melbourne, Sydney. I have friends in Gold Coast. I got friends all over Australia. I just think it's a great place for sports. So for me to take that opportunity, I was elated.
Okay. And so, what was I going to say? Yeah, I guess the NBL, you're saying it wouldn't have been known at that time. Now, like, I was watching the NBA the other day, and every Golden State Warriors telecast, it's like, you know, Bogut's come from the NBL, and Sydney Kings, it's starting to become more of a conversation. And there's a whole reason for that. I think the betting, where the hours work, like, when NBA games end, there might be NBL games starting. So that's what they're kind of doing. So, but with the Wildcats, so you get the thing, because obviously, 2007, I think a year or two before that, the Perth's greatest import, Ricky Grace, point guard, you may have heard of him, great player, had just retired. Yeah,
great, legend.
Just retired, and it was like, let's get this. But I remember your name was floated, and I was in Perth at the time. And I remember I saw some, you know, we were in a small gym, and I remember preseason games watching you play, and I thought, this guy is a really good replacement for Ricky Grace. It's going to take him a while to work out the league and stuff, but when it does, this is going to be great. It's going to be brilliant. You get to Australia. The Wildcats put you through this crazy, like, boot camp, military-type training. Do you remember that? Tell me about that.
Yeah, man, that was a crazy experience, man. Like, we did some boot camp thing where we were out in the forest and, you know, dodging snakes and all that. Look, man, I'm from Detroit. I'm a city kid. I don't know anything about that. We're in the ocean. There's, like, sharks out here. So we went through this whole thing and, luckily, I survived and went through all that. But it was a crazy moment. I was like, "What did I sign up for, man? What is going on here? What are they doing here?"
Because I went back and looked at the old newsreel, and that's not really the done thing. That's more of an AFL thing because basketball it's obviously athletic, but the fitness is different. That sort of training to me looked more like an AFL or NFL type I don't know if it really translated. I don't know if it was the best idea for a basketball team. I like the idea of being camping and staying together, but the actual physicality of it didn't really make sense to me from what I saw.
We did so many push-ups and so like it was. We ran like I think we ran like 6 miles on the sand. Like it was brutal. It was brutal.
But you made it through.
I made it. I survived.
Okay, good man. My next question: how did you find playing in the NBL? Like the pace of game, the style, the sort of talent level. How did you find
it? Loved it. I loved it. I loved the way the NBL was set up. It was just like a miniature NBA to me. Mm-hmm. And at that stage of my career, like, I wanted to finish my career in Australia. Like, I think I was 28 or something like that. 28, yeah. 28, 27, somewhere around there in my late 20s. And mm-hmm. I was like, I want to finish my career here. I was kind of done with the European go around.
You're scrapping a bit more. Like, Perth, it's a little bit like, bang, here, English, money, good, lifestyle.
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. I'm going to just play. Yeah, and I figured, like, you know what? I'm gonna play about 5 or 6 years here, man. Sean Redditch was my teammate. Obviously, he's a legend. Great player. Yeah. Great player, great person, you know. So I just figured, hey, man, I'll play 5 or 6 years here, and then I'm going to retire, you know. But I just think, you know, you brought up Ricky Grace, and I think a lot of times – when you try to make people other people is when you set them up for failure.
Yeah.
And I think that I was kind of set up for failure because Ricky Grace was so great there. Mm. And he, you know, he's a legend there. And it's like, you can't do that to every import that comes in.
Yeah.
And for he, and me and Ricky spoke about this. We developed a great friendship when I was there, and I would call him all the time, and he would always tell me, like, Rashad, I want you to be you, man. Don't get caught up in trying to live in my shoes, my footsteps. Yeah. And I know how it's hard on you. And like, he was a phenomenal mentor to me when I was there. And I still, you know, I take my hat off to Ricky Grace because he understood what I was going through, you know, trying to live up to that. And I wanted to just kind of carve my own niche and go from there. And I think the people hadn't gotten over Ricky Grace. He was still in the air, you know. Mm. And so everything I did, if I did something wrong, it was like, well, Ricky Grace wouldn't do that.
Right. You know?
So I think the pressure of that, it kind of got to the management at Perth.
Yeah. Because, and, I mean, I looked at your – oh, sorry, you were saying, Rashad?
And it just kind of came down on me, you know. But go ahead, like you were saying.
Because I watch you go. First of all, Ricky's a left-hander. You're right.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're both point guards, but you're quicker, I think. Yeah. A lot quicker, I think, especially with the ball.
Different style of player.
Different players. And, yeah, and that was a big thing. Like, oh, Ricky Grace is gone, but now it's Rashad. It was a bad, as you say, it was a bad tagline to put on you or anyone.
I didn't like it from the beginning. But, you know, I was, you know, I didn't, I couldn't say anything. Of course I just had to, you know, had to embrace it. But deep down inside, I would call back home and tell my dad and my mom, like, I don't really like that they're trying to compare me to like this legend, you know, like, let me just try to find my way here and get going. I just think that the pressure was too much, not on me. I didn't like it. It didn't bother me, but I think it bothered the Perth management.
Right. So then you're there for about 7 games and you're playing well. 7.5 assists, leading the league in double-doubles, scoring a bit, you know, between sort of double digits, 15 or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the team's playing well. When do you feel like things are starting to sour? When are you like, what's going on? Do you and Fish ever get into it?
We never got into it. Like, Fish was actually – he was actually cool, but it was like I would hear stuff behind the curtains and it would be like, wow, he doesn't approach me like that. He doesn't, you know, but after around game four, after like the fourth game, I started to feel like, you know, my minutes started being decreased. They started putting me in a second unit in practice and I didn't understand. Like, I was completely confused at what was going on. And it was like, cause Fish brought me in when I first got off the plane, Fish brought me in and he was like, look, I want you to play like Steve Nash. We don't need you to score 30 points. I know you've done that your whole career in Europe.
Yeah.
But we kind of want you to be more of a 15, 16 point score, 7, 8 assists. And that's what I did.
Check. Yeah. That's what
I did. I did exactly what he asked me to do. Yeah. And I was like, okay, like, you know, and so I just felt like I was doing what I was asked to do.
Yeah.
You know, I was averaging like 15, 16 points. 8 assists, and like I think I left averaging 7.5 assists. But you got to think, like, the last 3 games, they were like messing with my minutes.
Yeah, I remember.
They were trying to drop my statistics. But when I was rolling, I was at like 16-9 for a minute.
Yeah.
You know,
I didn't watch the Well, the commentator here who I love is Steve Carfino, and I went back and looked at some highlights and stuff, and I think he's got a really good eye for talent, and he was like, this Rashad Tucker, like, you know, he's doing all this, and give it time, there'll be more, and I got a respect for his eye for talent, and he was mad about just so, it was just perplexing, and it was, so much of it was unspoken, as you said, how you would look around, like, what's going on here, like, you're hearing things, but you're not getting told things, you're hearing, but you're not getting told.
Yes.
So my then question is, like, then there was a question of, like, your physical condition. I think it came out later in the piece in the news.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. What happened there?
Well, that's a great question, because when I got there, I took my physical.
Boot camp.
I passed the physical. I passed the boot camp. So those were two physical, like, literally two physical moments. And I think they needed to create a narrative to cut my contract.
Right.
So they was like, oh, he's not in shape. And that kind of.
Did they ever come to you at any point and say, oh, Rashad, well, we think this, we want to change your diet. There was no conversation of it while, you know.
Well, they started. Well, this is what happened. Like, after like game four, it was like they would send a weight room guy to me and be like, oh, you got to stay for extra conditioning after practice or this and that. And I was like, okay, I never understood it, because at the time, I think I weighed 171. My playing weight was always 165.
Yeah.
So I was maybe 6 pounds away from where I was when I was 22 years old. I was, you know, so I didn't. And if you look at my play, my statistics, my physical condition didn't stop me from leading NBL in assists and double double. So I just felt like it was. I had been through the ringer enough times in Europe to understand that, okay, here's the setup for them to create a moment where they're going to use this against me to kind of get rid of me. Like, I started to smell what was going on. And I actually talked to Ricky Grace about that as well. Yeah. You know, so I was able to lean on Ricky Grace throughout the process, and he kind of understood what was going on too.
Here's one. Did you ever ask, like, Sean Redditch about this? Because Sean Redditch had that 1 year in New Zealand in the NBL, got cut, came to the Wildcats. Did he ever have a similar thing there, or did you guys ever have that conversation at all?
We actually didn't. I knew his story. His story was phenomenal. And like I said, I think he's a Hall of Famer. But no, we never discussed that. But one thing I can say, like, I've played on about 25 different teams in my career. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you, my Perth teammates, they're probably the best teammates that I've ever had collectively.
Yeah. So like, who's on that team? You got Redditch. Paul
Rogers. Yep.
Rogers.
Rogie was on Peter my Crawford. Team. Peter Crawford. I love that dude to death. Adam was on my team. Adam Law. Adam was on my team.
Yeah.
Robbie.
And K-Porn.
K-Porn was on my team. What is K-Porn? Is K-Porn coaching or something?
So yeah, he's coaching. I think he might even be on the Boomers, like the Australian team. Because you guys were a good team, really good.
I just think that I think we could have won some championships if they would have left me on that team. Like, if they would have just gave me 2 or 3 years us together, I think we would have won the NBL champ. I really believe that.
Yeah, I think so let's talk about this. So then when you're starting to get the vibe of things, you're like, uh-oh, even so early on the piece, you're probably still thinking, well, it's so early, like, surely no one's going to. When do you first get that tap on the shoulder, like, we're having this discussion? When does that happen, and how does it happen?
This was after we played Canes.
Mm-hmm.
We beat Canes. I didn't play a lot. I think I had, like, 10 points and, like, 5 assists, but I didn't play a lot.
Yeah,
we beat Canes. We beat Canes, and I think we were like 5-3 or something. We were like tied for first place. We were like 1 or 2 in the league. I do remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Vlahov, and it's funny, I got a story about him. Me and Vlahov actually spoke about a year ago, and he actually apologized to me.
Wow.
But we'll talk about that later. But Andrew Vlahov was like, hey, can you meet me in the back really quick? This was after we won. I'm
so
in a
you're, Are you walking in there like this? Like, all right, great. We're talking about the win. Oh man.
I got a sense of what's going on because it's like, they're not playing the last two games. They haven't played me. So I'm thinking like, they're probably going to cut me. So I go in, I get dressed, you know, good game guys, you know, talking to my teammates, you know, we had a great team. So I go in the back with Vlahov and he's like, yeah, mate. I mean, you've been great here. I mean, you've had some great games, but we just feel like we're going to cut you. And I was just like,
what he said? What he said? Cut.
Mm-hmm. You know, if you know Andrew Vlahov, he's a straight shooter, man.
He is a very straight shooter. Yeah,
he doesn't care. He's a tough guy, and I respect that.
Yeah,
I respect that.
You'd rather have one to the head. Yeah, you'd rather have it that way.
Just tell me, you know. Yeah. And he was like, "We're going to cut you," but. You know, you've been great. And it was funny because he was like, you've been great here. You're one of the best point guards in the league. So I'm just kind of like, why are you cutting me?
What did he say to that? Did you ask him that? Did you straight up say, what, why?
I said, I don't understand. He just kept saying, you know, it's just not a perfect fit for, it's not a fit that we thought we were looking for, you know. And that's when I thought in the back of my head, this is kind of like, the Ricky Grace thing that's just too much. You know, Vlahov played with Ricky. Played with Ricky. You know, So I just thought that, you know, it was sad, you know. And after the game, you know, I went back and I was perplexed. And then I started seeing, you know, articles, well, Perf cut Rashad because he wasn't in shape. I started seeing that. And it hurt because I was like, like, you're going to drag my name through the mud? Why? I'm confused.
It'd be different if they just said, it's just, we're going in a different direction, end of story. No, you know, that little stuff that leaks out, that'll piss you off.
Yeah. Yep. Here's your money. Go home, you know. So,
am I right in saying they hired or hired a replacement while you were still playing? And that replacement was?
I think, yeah, they had a guy. I forgot his name. What was his name? You got it.
There's either two guys. The guy who replaced you, his surname was Brown. Jalen Brown? No.
Gerald Brown.
Gerald Brown is the guy who joins the team, but apparently the guy who they were in talks with was Corey Homicide Williams. Do you know Corey Homicide Williams?
Yeah, I know Corey. Corey was playing for Townsville.
That's right. That was the year he joined the NBL, I think. He was telling the story on a podcast he does here in Australia. And he was saying that basically Perth contacted him, said, yeah, we want you. And you were playing at the time. And they said, listen, we've got Rashad Phillips right now, but we're going to make the transition to you. And he said, like, oh, well, wait a second. I'm going to keep looking around. Townsville offered him the same amount of money, but were immediate. And he took the offer there.
Yeah, so that's what happened. I didn't know what was going on. Yeah, but that's what I heard. It was weird to me because it was like, we had similar style of play.
Yeah, very.
So I'm thinking, why would you, you know, like, I don't understand, like, what's going on. So like I said, for me, there's so much stuff that goes on behind the curtain. I don't know if his agent was cool with Vlahov or, like, I don't know what the connection was.
Yeah, Gerald Brown, not that I know anything from behind the doors, but as it presents from the front, he had played with Luke Longley in Phoenix. Longley was involved with the Wildcats, and Longley, Vlahov played against him a long time. So there was a connection.
There was a connection there, and I think, yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I think a lot of it, I got caught in the crossfire, too.
Yeah.
Just of other people, because I was there off no connections. You know, I didn't. I was just there because they wanted me as a player. You know, I wasn't connected to Luke Longley or any of that. I was just there as a player. So that I think that that's why I was like, let's get them out, you know, and they had to create a narrative of how they got me out.
Yeah, and I don't want to cause any flare-ups or anything, but was there ever a time where you were like, this is BS, where you were like, yeah, nuts? Yeah. So what happened? If you don't tell as much as you want or as little as you want about that.
Well, I was pissed about it because I actually went to the office and said, look, man, like, you know, I'm going to speak my side of the story because I'm looking, you know, I have friends in Adelaide. I had friends all over Australia, and they were calling me, and like players around the league were checking on me. They were calling me like this. Even Copeland called me. He was with Adelaide at the time.
He was playing. He was really at the tail end of his career. But yeah, he was there. Yeah,
he was at Adelaide, and he called me and was like, "I don't like this. This is BS." you know, all the players around the league. So I went to the office and said, hey, look, man, like, I demanded my money. My agent was like, hey, man, you need to get your money because it was a breach of contract. And then so it kind of went to a point where they knew eventually my career would go into the media and stuff like that, because I've always said that. So they put like a, it was a contract that had a 7-year clause, a 7-year gap where my money unless I sign this thing. So I ended up staying in Perth like an extra month or two debating if I wanted to sign that, because I wanted to tell the truth.
Yeah.
So I ended up signing because my agent was like, look, you're losing money by sitting in Australia.
Yeah.
You know, sign a thing and 7 years ago like this, and you can tell your story, wipe your hands of it, sign it, get your money, go back home, we'll get you another job, blah, blah, blah. So I signed it. They gave me a portion of my money, a portion of it. It was a good chunk of it, gave me a portion of it. I went back home, and I just I thought about everything from there.
Okay, and then you got the rest of it, and you got the rest of it after that 7-year period.
No. They gave me a they gave me a chunk of it. After I signed it, they gave me a chunk of it, and I went home. I went home with my money, but it wasn't what I signed up for. But it was a chunk of money, so it held me over for a while. But
Still
was the fact that, you know, just how it was done. But I really couldn't speak on it, and then for years, social media started to grow and grow and grow, and that muzzle started to come off. So now the 7 years is off, and I can actually tell people what actually happened.
And was it in that contract? Did it say you can't go to another NBL club? Because I would have thought other teams would have been like, great, that was a part of the contract.
It would to go to another club. I had to leave, and I just think that that organization and not Perth itself. It was the people who was working for Perth. Yeah. I don't want people to think like I love Perth. I got friends all over Perth that I talk to still today. Right. But I think that the management that was working, that was representing the Wildcats, didn't want me in the NBL because they knew what I would do as a player, first of all.
Yeah, firstly. And then secondly, as a character.
They would tell what actually happened. So they wanted me completely out of Australia for that.
And in that contract said you can't sign with an NBL team for that 7-year period?
No, just for that season. But after that bad taste in my mouth, I didn't want to go back to Australia.
Understandable,
it was long of a plane ride. The hours were off from America. So I was like, I'm not dealing with that no more. I'm done. Yeah,
makes sense. My question then is, what did you do for that month or so you were in Perth debating? Like, where were you going? What were you up to? Were you hooping or just chilling out?
I was chilling. I was hanging out with my friends, man. I flew to Adelaide a couple of times and hung out with my friends. I was in Sydney. Like, I was relaxing after a while. Mm-hmm. But then I wanted to get back to plan and leave. So once they gave me my money, I got on the first plane and I was back home.
So you're around the Wildcats. I'm just thinking, so you have that sort of dispute. And then, so there's never any animosity with Fisher and that, with the play style. Like, you never had a clash sort of personality-wise or philosophy-wise. No. It really was just skimmed across. Wow.
Never. Me and Fish never, like, had an argument or nothing. I mean, you can ask any of my former teammates, man. You see any of them on the street, ask them about me. They'll tell you the same story. Like, I never had any falling out or anything with the coaches or the management. Nothing. It just was like, I felt like one day Fisher woke up and Vlahov woke up on the wrong side of the bed, and they took it out on me. Because it was like one day Fisher went from being like a great coach to me and a great mentor to me to one day he just didn't like me, and I didn't understand. You know, and for me, it's like, I'm man enough to say if I'm doing something wrong. I'm a grown man, and I'm not going to play victim or anything here. It's just like one day he came to practice, and it was just like he was a different person.
Wow.
And I was like, something had to go on that had nothing to do with me. Because even in the preseason, if you look at my preseason stats, like, I had a game where I had 14 assists in the preseason. Like, you can look it up.
I think I could have been at that game. I mean, I don't remember specifically, but I remember some of your preseasons, yeah.
In the preseason game, I had 14 points, 14 assists, and 7 steals.
That's what you want.
And it was like, and I was just like, and he asked me to play that way. Like, I could have went out and just had 35 points and 4 assists, but he wanted me to play a certain way. So I was able to adjust my game to play the way that he wanted me to play, but I still had an impact on the game. Right. You can ask any of my teammates, any of them.
My other thing was, I think we touched on it before, but the replacement, I'm pretty sure he was at your last game in Cairns. I'm pretty sure he's in the stands. He was there. What's that like?
That was crazy.
He must have been pissed.
It was sad because it was like, wow, like, I didn't do anything that warranted that type of treatment. Mm. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally.
It was like, even like some of the fans, like, they were like, you know, I actually went to a game after they cut me. I went to a game because some of my Perth friends invited me to a game.
Wow.
So I actually sat front row with some of the Perth people, and they were just like, we watched Perth play. And after the game, all of my teammates came over to me and were hugging and exchanging because they knew that it was wrong. I mean, still to this day, like Peter Crawford, I still talk to Peter Crawford via Instagram and stuff. Like, still to this day, I still talk to my Perth teammates, and they still say to this day it was wrong what they did.
How much of it do you think was like, we bid off too much? It was if we paid too much, and now we're like, let's we put too much money out there. Let's try and recoup some of it. As well as the Ricky Grace narrative, do you think there was a lot of that as well? Because I know the NBL was kind of financially, you know, teetering a little bit at that time.
I think they were like, look, I think we that's a lot of money to give one person. We got to figure out a way to try to get it back. So, you know, I think money had a lot to do with it. Yeah, I really do. And the whole he's out of shape narrative, I think that was just to make the public sigh.
And it came out so late in the piece as well. Like, it just came out. I remember it coming out well after you'd gone, maybe, you know, a couple of games after. It wasn't like it was like, oh, you know, we're about to play Cairns next week and Rashad's not. It wasn't like that. That wasn't how the story went, you know?
Yeah, it was like, I'm reading in the paper like, oh, the reason we cut import Rashad Phillips because he wasn't physically fit. Like, I was reading this stuff in the paper, and I'm like, really? Like, I didn't lose sprints in practice. I'm confused. So that just was, but now that I'm older now, I understand the business side of it and what they were doing, and they were trying to recoup some of that money. And they brought in Gerald, and I don't want to speak on nobody else's money, but I just know that they were just trying to save money, and they had to cut costs, and I was the first.
Did you ever have any any like conversations with Gerald? You know, like, it was like a handshake. Never met him.
Never knew. And this is funny, man. Like, during the time when they cut me, because I was there a month after they cut me, my team will come over to the house after practice. Even Ben Hunt. Ben Hunt was one of
them. Remember,
Ben Hunt's here. He's here in America with me. He's at Dallas.
Dallas Mavericks. Yeah, he's works for development coaching or something.
Yeah, he works for the Dallas Mavericks, and we're friends to this day, still to this day. And I remember he would come over my house after practice, and Ben would say, in this Australian action, he isn't you. I said, how did practice go today with you? You know, and this is nothing against Gerald, but they will come to me and tell me, like, he's nowhere near you. Like, you know.
I think he continued to come off the bench himself. I'll have to look at that again, but I don't think he was even the starter as well.
I don't think he started.
And so the year just literally, the year just went along, just made the finals bounce straight away. It was one of the few, you know, not losing years, but just sort of forgettable years of the Wildcats, who were used to, you know, huge success.
Yes. Yeah.
What could have been. Let's talk about what you're doing now. So you're doing sports 2319, 2319. Which way do you like to pronounce it?
2319.
You're doing that. What gave you that idea?
I've always loved evaluating players. You know, I've always loved it. I love media. I love to speak the game. And so I just figured once my career was done, I wanted to create a platform where all players can have a voice. I think the media, doesn't give everybody a voice. They only give certain people a voice as far as players. So I wanted to create a sports talk show where I would talk about everybody, the player that's the 11th player on the bench, mm-hmm. or give these college kids that come from mid-major schools like me a platform to voice themselves, because the main media, nothing against the main media, but they don't have time to talk about the kid that's good that plays at Murray State. They don't have time to, they have to focus on, you know, Kentucky's and the Michigan
top
State.
Five, top 10, yep.
Yeah, they don't have time to talk about a kid at Nevada or Wofford or Wyoming. So I created a show where I was going to be the person that gives the voice to the superstars that are not being talked about from mid-major schools.
And is that something that, is there a particular journalist who you liked growing up and wanted to emulate, like someone whose voice you liked from a performance side of it, but also like what you're trying to do with giving a voice to Leslie Guys or something like that?
Yeah, well, it's funny because obviously my name's Rashad. My dad named me after Ahmad Rashad. Ahmad Rashad used to do all the inside stuff.
Yeah, who did he get?
Yeah, and he was a phenomenal football player for the Minnesota Vikings. And
he played NBA as well. Played for Philly.
So he was he's a football player, NFL player.
NFL player?
Okay. Yeah, he used to interview Michael Jordan. He worked for the NBA.
I think he played. I'll double check.
He did a little tiny.
He was an
NBA player though. He was an NFL player. But anyway, his media, I think him being in the media kind of sparked my interest of doing it. And as I got older, I really love Colin Cowherd. He's a guy that I really love watching on TV, and mm-hmm. Rob Parker. And so I started to, you know, I went to college for this. A lot of people don't know, like I graduated with a liberal arts degree in communication. So it's something that I've always wanted to do.
We'll be doing. Cool. Mike, I sent you a thing on Twitter. I don't know if you saw it. There were a couple of guys who played NBL. One was Brian Bowen, who did commit to Louisville, but that kind of fell through and came over here. Do you know his game? Do you have any idea of his draft choice? Have you looked into it at all?
Yeah. You know, he's a kid from Michigan, so I'm familiar with him. He's a slashing type of guy. He can
3-and-D
guy. I think he's a pretty good player. I think he's a pretty good player.
My last question is,
yeah,
if a player approached you today and said, you know, young college kid who's done 4 years, good player, but you know, NBA hasn't worked out or whatever, comes and says, I've got an offer from an NBL club, what would you say?
I would say go.
Yeah.
I would say go. I think the NBL is, I still think it's a premier league. I don't think the NBL gets its due respect throughout the world. Like, I think it's a fantastic league. Like I said, the teams are great. The cities are great. It's English speaking. You got to get used to the steering wheel being on the other side. But other than that, I just think that more Americans, more imports should look into the NBL. And if I was the NBL, I don't know the financial situation, but I would try to expand the league.
Yeah.
I don't know,
teams at the minute.
Oh, man, you guys need like 18 teams.
Yeah, like the mid-teens would be lovely. At the height of the league, it was 16.
See what I'm saying? Like, I think between 16 to 18 teams – I mean, you got great cities like Perth, Gold Coast.
You used to have a team, doesn't anymore.
I know my boy Jason Crow used to play for Gold Coast from California. Like Gold Coast is great. Gold Coast is like Florida, you know. Yeah.
It's a city right on the beach. You know, it's amazing.
Like, so I just think that I don't know if they can get the funding, but I just think that the NBL, if you had about 16 to 18 teams, I think it'd be a Premier League. Yeah, I really do.
It's on the way up. Like, obviously, Andrew Bogut, not only being Australian, but being such a big player, like, he's come over, and that's the first stone, getting that American recognition going forth. So,
yeah,
you know, watch this space, I guess, you know, see what happens. But, you know, love watching you play.
Appreciate it.
You know, good luck with everything, and thanks for doing this. Appreciate it. And good luck with 2319.
Thank you, brother.
Rashad, we'll stay in touch. Thanks so much. And be in touch. So I'll be watching your draft stuff. You know, keep that bridge between USA and Australia. Keep it going. It's great.
Absolutely. Rashad. Appreciate it, brother.
Thanks very much, man.